This is Radio Superior 1943, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from 1943. This is a true story of our past, so step back with us to another time and hear this recreation of radio as it may have sounded in 1943. We bring you now to the KUWS radio studios at the Superior State Teachers College and the Martin and McKenna Show.
Well, hello, 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 good listeners. This is Station KUWS, broadcasting from studios at Superior State Teachers College in Superior, Wisconsin, the land of beautiful and frozen lakes. It's Tuesday, January 19th, 1943. Lou Martin is standing by with the Wisconsin Telephone Company 6 o'clock news. Hey, big news. The Reds have the Nazis on the run at Leningrad. We have a special wireless report from Henry Cassidy in Moscow. Then we have swinging music from Roth's Hit Parade for you. And now Lou Martin with the Wisconsin Telephone Company 6 o'clock report. Wisconsin Telephone Company reminding you to not tie up Uncle Sam's arms by tying up the telephone lines. Hi, Lou, is it just me or are you cold too?
I can see my breath in the newsroom. You'd better check the thermostat. It's 22 degrees below zero outside.
Inside, too, I think, Lou. Not a whole lot of warmer inside. I can't feel the tip of my doze.
Even so, the news will go on, good listeners, and it's of a great victory and a turning point in the European War. The 17-month siege of Leningrad is over. The Nazis first encircled Leningrad on August of 1941. Now two Soviet columns have smashed that ring and have Hitler's forces on the run. Russians are thrilling to the news. The Red Army is pushing the enemy back from frozen Lake Ladoga, outside of Leningrad, and to the south of the Caucasus. A similar disaster may be in the making for German troops in Leningrad. In an ironic twist, Soviet troops have surrounded Nazi forces in Leningrad. Now they're in what looks like to be a mortal battle, destroying Hitler's dream of dominating the Soviet Empire. A London Listening Post recorded this shortwave broadcast earlier today from United Press Foreign Service reporter Henry Cassidy with the first of our World Roundup War Report.
Moscow calling. This is Moscow calling. Henry Cassidy reporting. The Red Army has successfully opened a five-mile-wide corridor into Russia's second city of Leningrad. This allows supplies to pour in and troops to pour out, attacking German forces. The Soviet troops are heading toward the Latvian border, threatening the German supply center. The Red Army is also pushing to free the steel city of Kharkov, the Pittsburgh of Russia's Ukraine. Workers here in Moscow, coming off shifts, shouted the news of victory to each other and pounded each other on the back. Comrades stood by radios and bought newspapers for fresh tidings of triumphs from the winter offensive. The Leningrad offensive began 1 week ago with a hurricane artillery barrage against German forces. So terrific was the barrage, Pravda reported, that it tilled up the frozen soil and splintered concrete pillboxes as though they were matchwood. Two Russian columns then attacked a Nazi stronghold, killing 13,000 Germans, four divisions, and capturing a large amount of armament. During this 17-month siege, Leningrad residents endured incredible hardships. At one time last summer, residents could see German soldiers from their rooftops. Now numbering half of its population with 1 million people, many starved and frozen to death in the past two winters. But these brave civilians refused to surrender and fought on to this glorious day in Russian history, January 19th, 1943. Reporting from Moscow, this is United Press foreign correspondent Henry Cassidy calling Egypt. Come in, Cairo.
This is Cairo, Cairo calling, Wes Gallagher reporting. The British 8th Army spurted into the home stretch of its drive across Libya Tuesday with an advance which carried one of two attacking columns to within 50 miles or less of Tripoli, closer than Marshal Rommel came to Alexandria last summer. With General Sir Bernard L. Montgomery pressing home his attack, the Axis had only a matter of hours in which to check the onslaught for an attempted stand or to quit the city in a withdrawal toward the Tunisian border 100 miles to the west. Montgomery's most advanced column was operating inland, and a communique said it had driven Axis forces from Bentulit and was in contact with the enemy towards Tarhuna, which is only 40 miles southeast of Tripoli. Reporting from Cairo, this is United Press foreign correspondent Wes Gallagher. Calling South Pacific Allied Headquarters, calling Australia.
Australia here. This is General MacArthur's headquarters, Daryl Berrigan, reporting on the first rollback of Japanese forces by Allied troops on the New Guinea Point. In Australia, Allied ground forces captured Banananda Point and Sanananda Village Monday, according to reports from the Advanced Operational Base in New Guinea. Allied occupation of the coastal end of the Japanese-held Papuan Corridor left the remnants of Lieutenant General Tamataro Hori's northeastern New Guinea army enveloped by Australian and American infantrymen in three restricted pockets lying from a half to 2 miles inland from the coast. All three are located along the main trail. The Australian capture of Sanananda Point and the adjacent village at noon Monday climaxed a series of coordinated attacking movements in which two American and three Australian infantry units took part. Later, the fall of the two Japanese positions was announced officially at a special press conference held at headquarters. In a continuation of the aggressive action which started Sunday, January the 17th, Sanananda Village and Sanananda Point and our forward elements reached Gilrua, the announcement said. Sanananda Point, lying between previously captured Gona and Buna, was the last remaining Japanese strong point in northeastern New Guinea. With it gone, there appeared little likelihood the enemy could hold out in strength, and action against the three pockets of trapped forces inland took on the character of a mop-up operation. With the Allied forces on the Sanananda front, this is your correspondent, Daryl Berrigan, United Press Foreign Service.
On the home front, sources with Selective Service in Washington say that men with children will soon be eligible for the draft. The War Department is increasing the size of its forces it believes will be needed to win the war. That number is now at 12 million men, which would end the exemption for married men with children in the draft. The pool of single men 18 years and older is down to rock bottom. Men with one child will be the first to be called, followed by men with two and three and so on. Wisconsin Telephone Company News Time is 6:06. Jack McKenna has this important word from our sponsor.
Indeed I do, Lou. Folks, this is a good idea if you want to help your country during wartime. Don't tie Uncle Sam's arms by tying up telephone lines. You follow me? The telephone has become so much a part of the American way of life that it is difficult for the average telephone user to appreciate the vital role it is playing in the nation's effort to win the war. To misuse telephone service these days is to slow the war effort, wittingly binding the arms of Uncle Sam. What can you do? Well, there are several things you can do, but let's take one that is very important. Don't make long-distance calls to war-busy centers unless they are essential. When you do, avoid rush hours. Call between noon and 2 p.m., 5 and 7 p.m., or after 9 p.m. Yes, folks, there are many ways you can help the war effort, and the Wisconsin Telephone Company says this is just one of them. Brrr. It's 44 degrees inside here. I'm going to get the engineer. Good old Joe Gardonio can fix anything.
Yeah, good old Joe. A Sawyer County family has been notified that their son has been wounded in action. Mr. and Mrs. Otto Ekman of Winter say that their son, Private Otto Ekman Jr., was wounded November the 15th in North Africa, according to a War Department communique. And Mrs. H.A. Owens of Rice Lake received word that her son, Private Herman Owens, is recovering from serious wounds. Private Owens was fighting Japs in New Guinea. The Henry Blomberg VFW will honor one of its youngest members tomorrow night. Seaman George Smith has been in the Navy for 2 years, including last year's battle of the Coral Sea in the South Pacific. On furlough now, Seaman Smith will tell the older vets about being on board the Southampton, which was hit by Japanese fire. He was knocked out by the explosion, coming to just in time to abandon the sinking ship. His father, Oren Smith, says his son was one of the last ones off of the Southampton. He's reportedly deeply tanned from 2 years in the tropical Pacific, so he tends to stand out from the very pale-skinned Superiorites this winter. Superior City Manager F. Robert Beekner's lawsuit to stop the city council from firing him has failed. KUWS reporter Mike Simonson has the latest on this battle over the city hall.
First, a split majority of the city council voted to fire Mr. Beekner, but the city manager, the first since Superior voted in 1941 to end its mayor-council government, contends that the city council's acting improperly. Court Commissioner McPherson granted a temporary injunction, but today, Circuit Court Judge Carl Daly overturned that injunction. Judge Daly gave City Attorney George Flynn the authority to drop papers ending the injunction. That allows the city council to go ahead and dismiss Mr. Beekner. It's rumored that the former mayor, George Dietrich, will be called out of retirement to run the city, not as mayor, but as city manager, Lou.
Thank you, KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson. Local banks are reflecting the boom in our economy. The Association of Commerce reports today that Superior Bank saw a big increase in assets from 1941 to 1942. By the end of 41, Superior Banks had a total of $10,900,000. By the end of last month, 1942's total assets leaped to $14,500,000.
Boy, that's an awful lot of piggy banks people opened last year, Luke.
That comes to an average of $400 more saved by each person in Superior.
Unfortunately, not this person.
A new semester opens on February the 1st at Superior State Teachers College. Acting President G.W. Smith says the college will offer new classes in fitting with the times. It includes an economics class about inflation during war times with price controls and rationing. Another course is chemicals in war. Other than that, Jack, the big news is that it's cold.
No kidding, Lou. 24 below in Ashland. Minus 32 in Mellon, 30 below in Grantsburg and Rice Lake, 21 below in Superior, 29 below in Duluth. It feels like it's 30 below in my socks right now.
It's pretty nippy in the studio here. Half of the elementary school kids were absent from school today at Cathedral and the public schools. 290 students didn't make it to class at Central Senior High in Superior.
Let's get to that forecast, Lou, from the United States Weather Bureau on Duluth's hillside for this January 19th, 1943. It looks like the coal delivery man is going to be busy this week, folks. This cold snap will last a few more days with a low tonight of about 30 below again. Look for a high temperature tomorrow as things warm up to 15 to 20 degrees below. If it keeps up like this, Admiral Byrd will be exploring our Lake Superior region instead of Antarctica. Let's warm things up then. Why not, good listeners? Nothing like getting those frozen toes tapping to heat things up. Here's Vaughn Monroe, and When the Lights Go On Again, from our Roth's Hit Parade on the Martin and McKenna Show on Station KUWS.
All over the world. will sail again all over the world. Then we'll have time for things like wedding rings, and free hearts will sing when the lights go on again.
The distinctive tones of Vaughn Monroe and When the Lights Go On Again on station KUWS. Hey, Lewis, did you leave an outside window open or something, for crying out loud? It's cold in here. Hey, you look all warm and fuzzy. What's going on? Did you find Engineer Joe?
Oh, Joe's all right. Yes, sirree. He's walking around in a T-shirt and shorts.
Well, he's got to be freezing or out of his head. Knowing engineers, it's probably the latter.
Nope, he's in the engineer's office. I'd say it's a balmy 77 degrees in there. Joe says that he'll take a look around the studio for any problems.
Hey, guys. Jeez, Jack, your lips are blue.
Which is a nice match for my toes.
Holy smokers, it's kind of nippy in here, fellas. I got to go back and put my sweater on. I'll be back to take a look-see around here. Let me tell you, something's not right when Lou is normally red nose is a white shade of white. I'll be back.
You might want to give that white spot a rub there, Lou. Get a little blood circulating on the tip of that noble nose. I've got the good word from Roths, ladies and gentlemen. A lot of people don't know about this, but they're going to know now. Hear the latest Victor and Bluebird records at Roths. Roths Hit Parade. Like from Tommy Dorsey, there are such things, star-spangled banner waving somewhere, and moonlight becomes you when the lights go on again. Abraham, dearly beloved, Brazil, my devotion, and here's Lou's favorite, I get the neck of the chicken. Well, I get the other end, Lou, it's all right. That's Freddie Martin's number there. And scrap records are worth money. Hey, we will pay 2 cents for 10-inch records, and we'll pay 2 cents for 12-inch records. How about that? Roths, Victor and Bluebird Records, hear the latest. Hey, let's listen to another swinging sound from Roths Hit Parade. Here's Glenn Miller and his orchestra, and Moonlight Becomes You, on the Frozen Martin and McKenna Show on Station KUWS.
Don't tell me I'm wrong.
Orchestra, folks, and Moonlight Becomes You on station KUWS. Hey, Lou, I see Joe is hard at work trying to fix the heat.
Well, I'm glad he's at it, but I'd rather not watch. When he's bending over, those pants are horribly low.
Disturbingly low, Lou.
I have news for this harsh cold snap in our region. Emergency fuel rations are available. Ration Board Clerk George Hawley says you need a valid reason to apply. If there is an error on your fuel oil ration application, or somebody fell ill in your home, or some other mistake was made, the Ration Board might allow you to buy more heating fuel oil. You just apply at the courthouse.
Do you think the teacher's college is out of fuel?
Well, it doesn't explain why it's so nice and warm in Joe's engineering office. He's got it nice and toasty in there.
That's where all the heat's going. It's downright unpatriotic.
Whoa! Would you looky here? I found myself a nice buffalo head nickel. It must have fell into this here heating vent.
On with the music, friends. Time to boogie-woogie with the boys in Company B. And nobody can do that like the Andrews sisters, of course, on the Martin and McKenna Show on station KUWS.
Chicago way. He had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was the top man at his craft. But then his number came up and he was gone with the draft. He's in the army now, a blowing reveille. He's a boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. They made him blow a bugle for his Uncle Sam. It really brought him down because he couldn't jam. The captain seemed to understand. Because the next day the cap went out and drafted a band. And now the company jumps when he plays reveille. He's a boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. A toot, a toot, a toot, a toot, a toot, he blows an A to the bar. In boogie rhythm, he can't blow a note unless a bass and guitar are playing with him. He makes the company jump when he plays reveille. He's a boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. He was a boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. He makes the company jump, hey, to the bar. He's a boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. Do-do-do-do-riada, do-riada, do-do-do, he blows it, hey, to the bar. He can blow a note if the bass and guitar isn't with him. The company jumps and he plays reveille. He's a boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. Every night and wakes them up the same way in the early bright. They clap their hands and stamp their feet because they know how he plays when someone gives him a beat. He really breaks it up when he plays reveille. He's a boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. Boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B.
Gotta love the Andrews sisters, man. That's their big hit from 1941. The boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B on station KUWS. It's cold in here.
Let's bring in our community editor, the lovely Harriet Farrig.
I trade warm for lovely right now, Lewis.
We have a man working on the problem now. Our engineer, Joe Gardonio, is the guy bending over there.
Don't look over there.
Way too late, Lou.
Goodness. Wouldn't a belt help him with his pants problem, Lewis?
I think he's had too many belts now. From this angle, it looks like Joe has a deeper problem.
Jack.
I think it's best to move right along and let Joe work.
Let go of my hat!
I think that's best, Lewis. We have such an important information to pass along today. The polio campaign is in full swing. Superior Chairman John Green is urging people to fill those green containers. You can find one in every public building in the city. This fight against infantile paralysis is led nationally by none other than Eddie Cantor, who calls his campaign the March of Dimes. He's sending birthday cards to every classroom in America to be filled with dimes from children all over the country. Such a wonderful man, that Eddie Cantor. There will be a fundraiser for Superior's new Service Men's Center right here at Superior State Teachers College Gymnasium. The newly formed Central High School Baton Twirling Group will perform at halftime of the Yellow Jackets Duluth Junior College Blue Jays Basketball Contest. This twirling group is so exciting. Central's S. Brindley Shaw is directing the kids, and they're just so good. All block leaders who didn't get their materials or take their oath office due to the large turnout at the last meeting are to meet Thursday at the YMCA.
Give me that!
Acting block leader chairwoman Mrs. Whitsitt will take care of all of that at the 2:30 meeting. And don't forget people. Tim can't drive collections this week at Central Park, East End, and the Gas Plant District. Dear me. It's so cold inside and outside, Lewis.
Wait in the engineer's office. It's warm and toasty for you in there.
Aren't you just the sweetest man, Lewis? Thank you.
Line out loud. Any luck, Joe? Besides finding the buffalo head on the nickel, that is?
If it wasn't so cold in here, I'd say you're crazy. Everything looks to be in good working order. Do you know what the problem is?
No, Joe, I don't. I do not know why I can't feel my feet anymore either.
You're not getting any heat. I'll be right back. I got another idea.
Sometimes the Martin and McKenna show can be the longest half hour of the day. But the music must go on. Here's Charlie Spivak and his orchestra, Mean to Me, on station KUWS.
Thank you.
me.
The crisp, cool music of Charlie Spivak and his orchestra with vocals by Irene Day. Jeez, cold in here. Mean to Me is what they played on the Martin and McKenna Show. Hey, Harriet, you know what's playing at the theaters? Maybe it'll be nice and warm there. Some hot buttered popcorn and a hot chocolate to drink.
What a lovely idea. The Andrews sisters are in the movies at the Beacon. It's a real super-do-killeroo called Give Out Sisters. Dan Bailey and William Frawley are in it, too. Or there's a picture playing at the Palace that's supposed to be a real good one with Jimmy Cagney called Yankee Doodle Dandy.
I like a good old gangster movie, Bang Bang and all that stuff.
This one's not like the other James Cagney movies, Jack.
Again. Excuse me. Man, is that good. I found out what the problem is. The heat's been routed away from the studios.
And I would like to know why and who and what and all that stuff.
Well, you know how when you guys stopped razzing me that things that were broken started getting fixed?
Right. At least stopped razzing you in front of you.
No more remarks about your attire or teeth, if I remember right.
That's right. And it made it a lot easier for me to get things done around here with your cooperation. That's what you might want to do for Axel Fennell down in the boiler room.
You mean Axel, the guy who emerges from the basement every Halloween to spread fear among the students and faculty?
I mean Axel, who likes certain kinds of music and has asked you a time or two to play that said music. Mm-hmm.
He means Axel, the guy who controls the temperature in each room here on the campus.
Oh, that Axel.
It wouldn't hurt to play his request now and then, you know. It's kind of lonely down there in the boiler room.
Okay. Tell him tomorrow first song is his, but that doesn't explain why your room is so warm.
He routed all your heat to my office. If you did like I do, Jack, and share a bite or two of your Limburger lunch from time to time, Axel will take care of you.
Too bad I don't enjoy smelly food like you and Axel do, Jack.
Hey, stay tuned for Fulton Lewis with the news, followed by Superman, folks. We're going to catch a Cagney flick at the Palace. I like those real shoot-em-ups.
It's not what you think, Jack.
Well, we'll see you tomorrow, folks. Same time, same place on your radio dial. The good Lord willing, and Axel gets his Limburger cheese. For Lou Martin, then, this is Jack McKenna speaking, and good night.
You have been listening to Radio Superior 1943, a weekly production presented by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Harriet Farrig is played by Jennifer Simonson. Foreign correspondent Daryl Berrigan is played by Paul Guggenheimer. Other performances by Don Hansen, Don Mason, Joel Anderson, all events reported on Radio Superior 1943 are actual accounts from the editions of the Superior Evening Telegram. Join us next week at this time for more Radio Superior 1943. This is your announcer, Tony Jasmine, speaking. Good night.